Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. Just simply fantastic. How about yourself?
Doing well. Doing well. Obviously, hopefully, everyone that's out there is listening is safe, dealing still with the issue of COVID. But tonight we've got an interesting topic. Han and I have been wanting to address this issue for many, many. Welcome, of course, to Straight Talk, episode number 82. So we're closing in on episode 100 pretty quickly. But episode 82 tonight is contractor extortion and what to do. Now, Han and I had a kind of a lively discussion about using the word extortion in the show topic title. So we'll let you be the judge of that, because Han and I have got tons and tons and tons of years of experience dealing with construction projects, dealing with contractors. And there are some great contractors and there are not some great contractors. So if we get questions all the time about what do we do? What should I do about this contractor who wants me to give them more money while I'm, trying to finish my project? And they've come up and said, we need more money for this or we need more money for that. I mean, we get that all the time, don't we, Hunt?
We get that more than we want to deal with. But yes.
Exactly.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's an all too common practice with some construction entities that they use that as a means to increase their bottom line. Now, to the contractors or the dentists who have great relationships with great contractors, you guys don't need to listen to us tonight, because it's that other pile or percentage of dentists out there that are doing projects or about to do projects or want to do a project that need to have this information. The best case is you take this information and use it as you plan and who you're going to select as a contractor, or maybe you're early in the construction phase, or maybe you're dealing with a particular issue with the contractor, and hopefully this information for tonight is going to be useful. As always, we have way too much to go over, so we're going to try to go through quite a lot of it. Some of the questions that we've particularly seen or have been raised lately, and then some of the examples that really bring this home to is this something you should pay or not pay? Because really, when it comes down to it, you're paying for your contractor to do one thing, and that is to build your project, and they're responsible for the means, the materials, and the methods. That's really what they're responsible for. So they're responsible for figuring out how to physically build it, how to physically schedule it, and how to get it from nothing. We're talking about either renovation, we're talking about an addition, or we're talking about a brand new build. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you agree to pay them based upon what construction documents you have created. Now, the very first thing that's very, very important in this is to make sure you have a thorough set of construction documents to build from. That's the quickest way to to minimize this issue of where a contractor comes back later and decides they want to extort or demand or request additional funds. Isn't that what we see, Hon?
Yeah, hey, Jim, besides having a detailed set of construction document, which in our opinion, that is your legal document that they have to build from. Another document I hear from time to time is that their contract with sir, and in their contract, they are to do this or that, and it supersedes the construction document. Could you share some of your experience pertaining to that? A lot of time what I find is the contract that the owner and the contractor have are usually not done by an attorney who's well-versed in construction contract. You know, life experience, things like that. So it put the owner in a very vulnerable state.
Well, actually, as a segue to this show, we hope to have as one of our guests a construction attorney, a specialist that deals with the construction and construction law, and we'll be able to ask them a lot of those questions. But you're right. The relationship that is supposed to exist is that the contract between you and the contractor is to reference the construction documents as the outline as to what is needed to be built, create the scope, and that scope is what the contract is based around. And that is the basis for their price and their timetable and how much they're going to charge and how much you're going to pay and how you're going to pay them. So that contract, I wouldn't say supersedes, but it in fact dovetails with. So there shouldn't be in the construction documents anything, if the contract's put together correctly, there shouldn't be anything that is duplicated within the contract that maybe says something differently than actually in the construction documents. They refer to each other as separate entities. So, you know, when we create our construction documents, we don't say in there that the contractor needs to provide whatever or do this or do that or this is the timing or this is none of that exists. That's part of the contract. That's not part of the construction documents. So you wouldn't have a conflict that way. Now, if there is a conflict between the specifications, which is a written form of instructions to the contract documents or the drawings, typically the specifications have taken higher priority, but that's a different issue altogether, and we can talk about that later. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yep.
With regard to the actual request, here's the correct way that a contractor should request additional funds. It's done through a process called a change order. This change order is usually created by the contractor using the proper forms, most likely their AIA forms or some other form, but mostly AIA forms. That form then is generated. It has a lot of stuff on it, original contract fee, what the new work is going to be, if there's an adjustment in schedule, and of course the additional cost. Now, sometimes change orders were reduction cost, not a lot, but sometimes. And one of the big thing is the reason for this change order. Now that is then given to us, the architect. We review it and either approve it or deny it, and then we pass it over to the owner, who will then eventually either accept it or not accept it. And then it goes back to the contractor for them to implement, and then it becomes officially part of the construction documents as part of the contract between the owner and the contractor. That's the way it should happen. And by the way, that all happens before any work is done. Correct, Tom?
That's correct. That is, it's very, very relevant, very important that it happen in that manner. Okay? Because after the fact, there will be not to me, there will be a lot of unhappy conversation.
Yeah. Jim? Well, they create, unfortunately, and we got a situation where you can get into an adversarial relationship very quickly. Now, let me give you an example, and then I'll let Han give you another example. But here's an example of the proper way to do it. We have a project that's under construction right now. The contractor placed the order for the light fixtures several months ago. Because of COVID-19, the light fixtures, the manufacturer of the light fixtures, this is a renovation, so we're matching the existing light fixtures that are already in the building, which was built 15 years ago. He found the original manufacturer. The original manufacturer said, yes, they're available. He placed the order for them. As of last week, they were placed on back order. Actually, 2 weeks ago, they were placed on back order because of COVID-19. Then, as of last week, the back order got changed to not available, meaning they are no longer available anywhere. So the contractor comes to us and the owner and says, here are three options of different light fixtures. They're different than the original, but they're kind of similar. But unfortunately, each one of them cost more money than the original. Each one of them have a different lead time than the original. And his words were, in the change order, his request was, I do not feel comfortable making a decision on which one to select. One, because it's additional funds, and two, it changes the duration of the construction. Please advise. We review those with the owner, make the selection. The change order is agreed to, and boom, you move forward down the pike. The prime example there is no work was done before agreement on the change, and nothing was ordered or nothing was spent on that project until a change was agreed by the owner. I'll give you let's hear the example of what not to do.
Jim, that particular scenario that you just described, the contractor process is to provide document pertaining to so that will review besides the price.
Correct. Yeah, everything is provided. Cut sheets on the equipment or the light fixtures, all the technical data so that we can review them properly, and of course the price tag as well as the duration on when they come in.
Yeah, and sometimes even warranties and so on. And that is the ideal situation for change order. Let me see. It would not be, in my opinion, and I think you'll agree with this, is that it would not be called a change order if, let's say, in this particular, we still have another project under construction, we specify a premium roof. When we say premium, it's a high quality, it has a long life, low maintenance, performance. but it's not a big brand name manufacturer. It's a very specialized manufacturer. Everything have a there's very few things on construction project that you can go to the big box store and besides nails and maybe a bucket of paint, but the big things like light fixtures and roof systems and stuff like that, it has to be order. Majority of the stuff on a construction, on a commercial project, usually are sold to a distributorship of distribution network. So it's not usually, you can't just go to the big store and buy them. Okay. So anyway, the process that, like, as Jim described, is change order. We can't either have too lead time that we can't get, or
hey Han, I'm sorry, you're breaking up greatly. I'm not quite sure what's happening down there. What are we getting, sunspots or something today? But unfortunately, you're kind of breaking up.
Can you hear me? Let me see. Let me take it off of the. Can you hear me better, Jim?
Yeah, that sounds better right now. Yeah, go ahead.
So anyway, yeah, I took it off the headset. Anyway, the process that Jim described earlier is that the contractor submit the alternative for whatever product it is. So that way the design team can review it, compare it, to make sure that they're getting the quality, the performance, the price, and everything that are comparable, and you're not swapping for something that are lesser for the same cost. Some of the products, especially specialty products like roofing material, some manufacturers require the contractor to be factory trained or certified. Okay, so those things are also important. We are familiar with those processes. The contractor, if they're experienced, also be familiar with those processes. If a contractor decided to substitute a product without prior approval, we as the architect can actually recommend to the owner that they don't accept the product, especially if the product, it would be a world of hurt for the contractor if he didn't get approval and he installed it. He takes on the responsibility, like Jim said earlier, that they are responsible for the means and method. Okay. They are the contractor is responsible for installing what was specified because he agreed to build the project with the material that had been selected for the project. So if he wants to do a substitution, that should be discussed up front. If there is an additional cost or there's a minus or credit, that should be discussed up front. Once they install it, that's a totally different ballgame. Okay, we have a project where the contractor would not and did not go to the factory certification until when the project is closer. As the schedule gets tighter and tighter, it becomes out of necessity, and we bought a different roofing system and install it. And then they bought it through a distribution network, so they couldn't even certify it. All the things that could go wrong with just one product, it's because the contractor does not understand the process of what he's responsible for. A roofing system is not a roofing system. They're not all created equal. So that review process have to be done prior to purchasing it and installing it. So the change order only only done correctly if it's done through the review process, the approval, and all that stuff before the ordering and fabrication and installation. Okay.
Now, in that particular situation, the contract, the owner has a few options. They can obviously accept what the contractor has put in place, and if there's going to be a credit back for because maybe it's an inferior product or wasn't as expensive or it was determined that it was a wash, and that has to be agreed upon, or the owner can say, no, I don't accept that. I want you to rip it out. And unfortunately, that would take there would be an extension of time necessary to be able to cause them to do that. So you have to weigh those kind of things when you get yourself into that position. It's much better to be proactive and have it so that you don't have to get into that situation. So that's kind of why we talked about the show title being extortion, because a lot of times a contractor will do this on purpose so that they can pin you into a corner and basically say, you've got to accept this because if not, I can't get it done in time. Or you can't get it done in time, or it's going to cost more money to do this, those kind of things. You've got to be real careful of that kind of situation happening.
Again, it's that you're working, you're working against time, and you're working against the budget. You're trying to stick to the budget, because a lot of our clients, they're possibly in the lease, and they're growing, and they're going to a new space, and their lease, they have so much time before the lease expires, and you want to work within that time frame so that by the time they're done, they're at the end of their lease, they can, they can move into the new location and have a little bit of wiggle room to play with. So a lot of the contractors know that. So when they put you in a situation where you don't have a choice, you're forced to make a decision because they got you by the short hair, it's very difficult because you accept it, or like you say, you tear it out. If they tear it out, that means that they would have to now order the product, order other material, maybe need to be certified. They might even have to find a new subcontractor because the original subcontractor are not certifiable, and so on. So it become a major headache. I think Jim and I were kind of cautious of using the word extortion, but there isn't any other word that we can describe when they put you, when they pin you against the corner and say, pay up or else. Jim?
Yeah, pay up or I can't get it done in time. Well, what's that cost you? It costs you a lot of money. We talked about that before. Every month to have a project not constructed, each operatory costing you, what, $25,000, $30,000 a month? That adds up when you got a bunch of operatories. So let's talk about material availability. That's another we talked a little bit about that on the light fixtures, for example. So that's an example of material availability. That could be a legitimate change order and an opportunity to have an adjustment to the cost of the contract. Now, labor shortage, is that really a legitimate one, Han?
In my opinion, no. Because the in the contract, it is the responsibility of the contractor to make sure that he has the labor necessary when the project, proceed. So I don't see that to be a change order or an extra cost that is imposed on the owner. Yes, you got, you know, you Now, let's say you have, in your small little town, there is a civil factory, civil school, school project or hospital project, large project tends to suck up the labor resource within the area. If a contractor from the area, are on their toes, they know that there is shortage in this trade or that trade, and they have to go out of the area, pay a little bit more to bring the labor, the necessary labor in to do the job, but it falls on their shoulder. So shortage in labor, become an issue during the bidding, they will stress that or state that in their contract and things like that. But once the contract is awarded and the issue of labor shortage, it's not, in my opinion, it's not a change order, at least the way I see it, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's a very important question to be asked when you interview your contractor, is how are they going to deal with labor shortage? How are they going to deal with upcoming work? What do they have in position to be able to deal with, the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 projects that are going under construction in your region, and how to best go around that? Obviously, COVID-19 kind of messed things up because a lot of the shutdowns and that kind of stuff caused some extraordinary stuff. Nobody could anticipate that. So there is a little bit of potential with the COVID-19 for labor shortage, but mostly it should be the responsibility of the contractor to get enough laborers on the job. So if they come back to you and say, I need extra money because I had to hire extra laborers to get the project done because of this particular or that particular shortage, that's not a legitimate change. That's not a legitimate cost. It should fall upon them. Material cost increases. Let's jump to the next one. Material cost increases. Is that legit?
It can be, but again, I would say maybe a compromise. Okay, you got the project. You award the project, right? You award the project. I think majority of the contractor who are seasoned and current with developing trends and what have you, they would have some idea what material is hard to get, what material is increasing in cost, and so on. And they should price their project accordingly, because everything is, it's not rocket science. It's all. Majority of this is basically basic experience and gut instinct. If you know that there is a shortage of concrete, for instance, because there are several large construction projects locally, they would bid it accordingly. No different than labor. Okay. I don't see. I don't see construction material increase is to be a change order, but that I think it could be handled on a case, on a case basis. It depends on how extensive it is, but in general, no, I don't see it that way.
Right, and that's true. In general, in the majority, should fall under the contractor's responsibility. There are some unique times that we're dealing with. COVID-19, again, is a unique scenario. Nobody expected this. A lot of plants had to shut down, and so material costs went up. I don't know about you down in your location, Han, but for example, over here at Home Depot, the other day I went to go get a treated 4x4, and there wasn't a single one within 50 miles.
A 4x4?
Yeah, a treated pine 4x4. I had to replace a fence post on my house, my backyard. It's like, what happened? Everything was shut down, so they weren't producing, and so they didn't have the available material. And so what was around, the cost was very expensive, if you could even find it. So that's an unforeseen that is a little different, and so that, you know, that might be legit, but typically material costs are the responsibility of the contractor. And that's their business. When you think that's their business on a day-to-day, they know what's happening to the cost of drywall, what's happening to the cost of wood, what's happening to the cost of steel, and they will bid the projects accordingly. So if they see that steel is going up, they're going to properly bid it, or they're going to have a relationship with the supplier and say, I want to reserve so much for this particular project, you hold my price for 30 days. Now, if you, the owner, delay the project past the typical established time frame that's in the construction documents and the specifications. So, for example, you say, originally we wanted to start construction this spring, but because of whatever, you decide, no, I'm going to start construction a year from now, next spring. Well, you can't hold the contractor to holding your material costs for a whole year. You can typically get maybe 30 to 60 days, and that's about it. So keep that in mind when it comes to material costing and holding them to those kind of things. Let's talk about scheduling issues, Hannah, when it comes to dealing with change orders and additional costs.
Yeah,
Jim, prime examples of what to do or not do. But go ahead.
Before we jump into scheduling, let's step back to just the last topic there. Because of the owner's delay or pushback on the starting, the starting of the project, would it be? Let me see. Knowing that the project is get pushed back, it costs the kickoff of the project may have to be hold off. Some contractor would charge you to stage the project again, right? If there's a charge to do that, and then if there is a potential cost difference in material increase and what have you, a seasoned contractor will bring that topic up to the owner so that the owner would know that there's a potential increase in cost due to the delay, right?
That's correct. And again, that's a very important question to ask your contractor when you interview them before you sign the contract. Ask about material cost increases and what systems and what protocols do they have in place to deal with them. Get that information, and based upon what they tell you will help you determine and become comfortable with their knowledge base to be able to say, yeah, these people know what they're doing and can handle that, as opposed to maybe a contractor who doesn't have that expertise and or ability, and they're just going to be at the whim of whatever the costs are on the day that they go pick up the material that they have to put in next week. Well, that's an opportunity or a ripe situation for the contractor to come back and say, hey, I need additional money because the material went up 25% between when I bid it and when I bought it. Well, that's not your fault, the dentist, the doctor. It's not your fault. It's his fault.
Yeah, you know, in our career, in the last couple of decades, there have been a few situations globally that affects material availability and material costs. For instance, a dentist's office are usually what we classify as light construction. It can be done, steel and concrete blocks. It could be done using numerous of different building systems, whether it's wood stud or metal studs. So if you have a, let's say there is an increase of 5 cents per linear foot of in wood, it could be a substantial amount of increase in using wood products. Meanwhile, the cost of steel is very stable. A contractor may present that, you know, that option. So a well-seasoned contractor would know how to dig and how to zag when things need to be done. But it is their responsibility to make sure that they deliver the project for the schedule that they propose and for the price that they agree. Jim?
Exactly. So when you talk about schedule, I want to give the example when we're talking about scheduling issues when it comes to potentially adding cost or not adding cost to your project. My example is a contractor on that same addition with the light fixtures. He created a schedule that was flexible enough that the roof material, meaning the roof structure, the sheathing, the roof covering, all that stuff was going up on, let's just use Monday, okay? It went up on Monday. His roofer had already gotten all the approvals, all the materials, everything lined up, and was scheduled to be there on Tuesday. So because the material was going to be installed on Monday, they finished it in one day. Now, it's a relatively small addition, but it could, you know, you can expand it to whatever size your project is. The contractor also had it in his schedule to observe the weather conditions to verify that he had the best opportunity to put this up in a period of time that wasn't going to get rained on, so that he didn't expose any of the roof structure to water. Obviously, water's a bad thing when it comes to the inside of your building, and it can be disastrous to a construction site if you're not properly prepared for it and also scheduling properly for it. So in this scenario, the contractor had the roofing material, everything ready, the subcontractor to put it up, everything ready to come in on Tuesday. So on Monday, they put up the structure, they put up the sheathing, they put up the insulation, everything necessary. Tuesday morning, less than 24, basically it was 12 hours later, the roofer shows up and puts on the roofing material, and then they finish their roofing material. That thing was weather tight in a relatively short period of time, 2 days. Not a lick of water got into the addition. Okay. Didn't get into the water, into the sheathing, didn't get into the structure, none of that stuff. That's a properly scheduled construction sequence. Now, on another project we've had, Han, you want to talk about that particular schedule and the failures that happened on that one?
Yeah. Besides keeping an eye on, you know, weather, labor, material, I mean, it's a very, if things go well, it's a really nice dance to watch. But it all falls into the shoulder of the contractor. They start with material. How long does it take to have this material delivered to the site? Some material, you know, maybe a couple weeks. If you order, let's say, a truckload of drywall, it probably can be there within a day or two. But some material takes 2, 4, or 6 weeks or longer. So they have to plan. If the, you know, I like to say weather condition, especially if you're working on the exterior of the building, it's really crucial. The only reason why you have a roof on the building is to keep the water out of the building interior. So when you open that, when the roof structure is installed, it is extremely crucial to make sure that the roof is enclosed and watertight as quickly as possible. So it's really important that the contractor know that what product that's been specified that he agreed to buy to install, and the contractor that's going to install it need to be have the appropriate certification and training and knowledge to install it. Because warranting the roof system for a building is not cheap. Trust me, when I was a youngster, I have asked, not asked, but instructed a contractor had put up half of a school building roof to rip it up because he did not use the appropriate material. That's the worst scenario for a contractor. So it's important that they follow everything, check to make sure that this is the product, this is the way it's installed, everything's approved before they actually put it down. So it's if you don't order the product on time, if it's not delivered on time, you don't have the right train crew working on the project and things like that, it's a disaster. It will be a huge disaster because you have a building that are not enclosed or watertight. When the rain hits into the interior, it creates other issues. So scheduling it is just absolutely crucial, and it's paramount that the contractor is on, is part of the A team and on his toe all the time, his or her toe all the time. Jim?
In that particular situation, we had a contractor that wasn't on their toes and created a situation where the roof structure went up and put an inferior water barrier up there to be able to protect the roof structure. That inferior water barrier got blown off because of high winds and other issues and let the roof structure and the building get saturated with water because the roofer was not scheduled to be there right after the structure was installed. And to acerbate the problem even more, because the roof structure got saturated with water, it had to be dried out. And you couldn't have put a roof on top of it once it got saturated with water because it would never dry out. So it had to be dried out. And the only way for it to dry out was to let Mother Nature and sun and wind do that. But unfortunately, weather didn't cooperate, and it got rained on. This went on for a couple weeks. Well, this saturated the roof structure, eventually got into the building and saturated some of the structure inside, and just caused us, kind of like a snowball effect on a lot of things. The contractor came back to the owner and wanted to have additional money to solve all these problems. Well, obviously our recommendation was the answer is not an acceptable change order. The contractor was responsible for scheduling, should have properly scheduled it in such a way that he placed a membrane of some sort over top of the structure, the roof structure, if he could not have got the roof on right after the install of the structure. His excuse was, well, he didn't have the certification from the manufacturer of the roofing because it was a special roofing that was installed. Well, that's not a legitimate excuse. That is just an excuse. He should have had that done. He should have scheduled that many months before that and have it ready so that it wasn't something that caused a delay. again, means, materials, and methods. That falls under the methods part of what the contractor is responsible for. Now, a simple fix, which is what he came up with after 2 weeks, was ordered a very large tarpaulin and covered the whole roof from edge to edge, corner to corner, and secured it down properly. That created a waterproof membrane that if he would have did the day that he installed the superstructure on the roof system, he would have had no issues whatsoever. Not a lick of water would have got into the structure or into the building. Again, failure under the scheduling issue. And that's not stuff you see in you don't have specifications or you don't have construction documents that say, order a tarpaulin big enough to be able to cover your building just in case. No, that falls under the means and the methods. That happens to do with the means side and the methods of constructing a building. That's a knowledge base. He should have understood that and known that, oh, okay, we've got a high likelihood of bad weather at this time of year, and installed or at least had available that tarpaulin to be able to cover that roof structure. A simple thing. And unfortunately, it was a scenario which caused weeks of delay and lots of stomach acid for the doctor. But eventually it got rectified, and they got the roofing system on, and now the thing's working properly. But again, an example of what not to do and what shouldn't be done when it comes to scheduling. The next one I have on my list is called unforeseen conditions. Now, that's a big one. First of all, what's an unforeseen condition?
Human remain on the project site is one.
Yeah.
Right. Archaeological discoveries is another.
A lot of times stuff in the ground, right? Yeah. Stuff in the ground. Yeah.
Freakish storm system come through, things like that. But unforeseen, that's basic things that you didn't expect, things that you didn't plan, things that you didn't see, things that nobody know. You know, and we run into a few of those things. Some of the fun project would be like 100-year-old building. You know, when you lift off the carpet, you have asbestos, things like that. So things happen. And some stuff are fun. Some stuff are a pain. Some is cheap. Some is not so cheap. So
yeah, that is true. And it's not always stuff that's in the ground, although unforeseen conditions usually have to do with things that are underground, that are buried. I'll give you an example of a bad unforeseen condition / change order request. Had a project under construction, happened to be wasn't a dental office, was for a city, but it's the same kind of scenario. It could easily have been a dental office. When you have a project, typically we ask for soil borings and a soils report, where they go out and drill holes in the ground and scientists and specialists, part of the civil engineering crew, will give you a report. And they'll tell you things like water table. They'll tell you about composition. They'll tell you about what the soil is made of and soil bearing pressure and all this technical stuff. Now, these are included as part of the construction documents. They're in the specification for the contractor to review when they bid. Well, the contractor reviewed and bid. In this particular project, there was a potential for a bad soil condition if it got wet, meaning at a certain depth, which happened to be the depth of the foundations, when you expose that area, and if it gets wet, it would become unstable. It's a special kind of soil, and it's fine as long as it doesn't get wet. Well, the contractor decided in the construction sequence to open the whole foundation for the building. This was a pretty large building, so it was a pretty large foundation. And they dug the whole thing. And didn't, one, properly schedule, and two, didn't properly cover the soils report and the understanding that they should never have opened that whole foundation. And it rained the night that night. That whole foundation system, the soil, got wet, became unstable, and then required remediation to be able to properly put the foundations in this unstable soil, which means some more had to come out. Special stone had to be placed. It had to be compacted. It was a mess. It literally was a mess. It was a two-week delay and cost lots of thousands of dollars. Okay. That was not a legitimate change order. Now, the contractor, to his credit, did not come back to the owner and say, I want additional money, because he knew he messed up and he should never have opened that whole foundation. He should have done that foundation in pieces, open up a section, pour it, open up another section, pour it, open up another section, pour it, because during that time of the year, it was a springtime, and you never know when you're going to get rained on. It's hard to, on a very large project, it's hard to say, okay, I'm going to get a guaranteed window of no rain. So it's kind of like two examples. So it's an example of bad planning, but it's an example of a good contractor. The contractor stepped up and understood that it was his responsibility, and he failed to do it properly. And this could be the exact same thing in your project down the road. If you're doing a new building or even an addition, that stuff has to be looked at with your team. Juan, any comments on that one?
The important factor is that Jim said with your team. All right. Somewhere in that process, of course, naturally, we all know there's a budget, and that budget you want to maintain. We often encourage our clients to have some contingency, to take care of the unforeseen. Okay. Often we hear some encouragement or recommendation that you skinny up your team. So it make it more streamlined, a little easier to communicate, or whatever the sales pitch is. And the very first sacrificial member of your team that are asked to be dismissed is your technical, design member, your architect. And that would be, in our opinion, would be your first worst mistake. So often we see that the contractor would say, hey, we do this all day long. We know buildings and yada, yada, and we don't need the architect. Well, we beg to differ. Because so often we have projects that things that we specify, the way we design it, the way it's detailed, we're familiar with the quality, the workmanship expected and all that good stuff. If the architect's responsibility on the project is to oversee and make sure that the contractor adhered to what was designed, if the architect is removed from the project, how do you, the owner, who doesn't know much about construction, know that the material had been changed, building system had been replaced, and so on? You don't. Most of the time, the building owner are not familiar with the building process or the building materials, so you wouldn't know. It would be spending a dollar to save a dime. Okay, you would shortchange yourself. So that would be the things that we would not recommend. You would basically hurt yourself. Jim?
Yeah. Now let's, in the few minutes we have left, let's talk about the general issues. What to look for. Okay, let's start off with the scenario. Early in the construction project, if you have a contractor that is throwing at you, raising these red flags, these issues, and saying, I need to have this, or I need to have that, or I want to have, I've got this particular change order or this particular issue. Okay. First of all, do not have a direct conversation and or approval with the contractor without involving the architect. Just like Hans said, you're not the expert when it comes to dealing with construction. Unless you've got a, you know, a bunch of years of construction experience under your belt, we wouldn't advise it. You must make decisions based upon what we would help you to recommend, give you the right information so that you can make correct decisions. Because unfortunately, a lot of time, some contractors, not all, there's good ones out there, but some contractors will try to get you to agree to things without our involvement, because then it's easier for them to come back later and say, well, Doc, you agreed to that. By the way, here's the bill for it. Oh, you agreed to that change. Oh, by the way, it cost me more money, so here's the bill for it. And you're kind of stuck. Well, so we recommend you don't do that. We'll help you to make sure that you don't get yourself into a situation that allows you to be exposed. The other thing is, if you start to see this kind of activity from a contractor early, you might be well advised to consider the opportunity early to terminate the contractor and go with another one, if that's a possibility, at least to investigate it, because it could be a scenario that it will happen over and over and over again till you get to the end of the project and you get into the worst possible situation where you have the contractor saying, I want this amount of money to make all of these adjustments, which, by the way, you agreed to, or I'm not going to finish your project. And that's happened. And it happens more than you... It happens more than you think. Now, great. If, you know, the good contractors, the great contractors, we're not talking about you guys. We're talking about the others. And it happens. And so there you are, basically being extorted. And what do? Well, you only have really two options. Negotiate a reduced price. Or say no and fight them in court, both of which are not great scenarios. So now you have to work. Now you have to weigh the worst and the worst. Which is the least worst of those two? Obviously, you know, fight them in court takes time, takes money. Nobody typically wins. It's like, just how much does it cost, the bleeding? And the other is, okay, negotiate a cost that, sure, you're not happy with. It's kind of like mediation. If you're ever going through mediation in a legal sense, nobody walks away happy. It's just a matter of, you know, how much did we all agree to hurt each other? And that's kind of that scenario. And unfortunately, you don't want to let yourself get into that. So keep your eyes open. Listen to your architect, hopefully they're a good one, that sees this kind of opportunity and these kind of situations happening. And early on, you have the opportunity to fix it. But if you let it go to the very end of the project and think you're going to negotiate and or it's going to resolve itself at the end, it's not going to. It's going to be the worst case scenario where they're going to basically say, I need this much more money, or I'm not finishing your project. And that's bad, isn't it, Hans?
That is really bad. Here's one that I think you should take heed. There's a lot of folks that go, hey, no problem. You go to the field, you go to the project site, and we don't encourage you to have daily interaction with the contractor, by the way. okay? We discourage you from being the front guy or front gal because what happened is that you forget the documentation of the conversation, instruction, all that stuff kind of fall between the cracks. And when the subject is brought up to your design team, who was not in the privy to that conversation you have between you and the contract and stuff like that, it creates a lot of confusion and things like that. There's things that you can do that, let me see, there are preventable headaches that you can help on your project. Typically, we like to have from the architectural, from the project team, there's always a point person. You know, from the architect side, this is the individual that's responsible for the project. All communication go to that individual. And then the engineer and so on. On the owner or the contractor side, there's one person that is the voice, the face of that, you know, that construction entity. We normally don't deal with, the architect normally don't deal with the subcontractor, okay? They deal with the contractor who trickle down that information, they disseminate that. But on the owner side of the project, there should only be one voice that speaks for the owner. If it's not the owner, it will be his or her representative. The architect naturally is already an advocate for the owner, all right? But from the owner side, either it's the owner or the owner rep, not both, okay? In other words, do not ever send your staff out to the project to speak on your behalf unless your staff member is very, very well versed with how the project was put together and very well versed in the project materials and technical aspects, because it's nothing worse than create a problem for you by having somebody that great at managing your office but suck out in the project field. Okay, it creates a lot of headache, and we've seen that too often. And so it's a very preventable issue, because they can create not just change order, but costly change order. For instance, you go out there to the job site and say, you know, I don't like the door there. Can we just move that? Well, moving a door is harmless. The contractor say, no problem, right? But the contractor didn't tell you, no problem, it costs you $1,200. They moved it. They'll come back later on and they tag you for it because you gave them instruction to do extra work. Now, here's some problem that could arise from that move. If the architect was not informed of what you're wishing to do, the architect has no way to tell you or no option to tell you, that door, if you move it, then we have to do this or that or that, because by moving that door, it would no longer be ADA compliant. So when you move it, you create problems for yourself. If you get the proper advice, recommendations, and so on, it allow your wishes to be implemented correctly. All right. So always include the architect. Don't let too many chefs from your side of the table come into the project site and start to give instruction. Jim?
Absolutely. Well, I want to leave you with a very short phrase. And if you get anything out of this, this is what you need to do. If you want, take a few minutes and write these words down. If you're in the construction of a project and your contractor says, I can do this, or we can do this, or we need to do that, your response, and I'm going to say it very slowly, should be, let me review that with my architect. I'm going to say that again. Let me review that with my architect. That should be your generic response to every time the contractor opens his mouth and wants to say something about changing this or adjusting that. Let me review that with my architect. You do that, and you will be in a much better position at the end of the day when that project is under construction and hopefully getting close to the end, as opposed to being in a situation where you're backed into a corner and being extorted with a contractor who's trying to get a bunch more money out of you, or he won't finish your project. Juan, I'll let you have the last words.
Okay. Actually, excellent piece of advice, Jim. I'm going to go back to the very beginning, okay? There's one thing that have been discussed, and unfortunately often it's compared to a construction of a house. When you have commercial projects, usually the contractor who work on them should be financially stable, where they don't require the owner to put any money up front, okay? Because this is a topic discussion I see more often than not, and it shouldn't, is that you are not required to put any money down to start the project. If that is part of the stipulation, you're using the wrong contractor, because that's the first sign that they're not financially stable enough to take on your project. Jim, that's it.
That's it. Well, hopefully it's been helpful. We went a few minutes over. Sorry about that. Like I said, we had a lot to go over, and we didn't get through all of it. We got through a good part of it. So look forward to next week, and you know, stay safe. On.
All right. Again, it's another hour of fun time. Hope we weren't too rough on everyone. Hope you learned a few things. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.